Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's SmackDown Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour, we will be reviewing this week's SmackDown at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. As always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, folks, Raw had pretty much turned out a decent go-home show. We were all in agreement that Raw had very much improved. You're listening to Wrestle Chat Radio. We'd all agreed that Raw had improved over the disasters that were the last several weeks and actually produced a pretty good go-home show. And SmackDown had something to live up to, certainly, this week, finally. And did they actually succeed in doing that? Well, the short answer is no, not really. This week's SmackDown wasn't a bad show. It wasn't a horrible show. Wasn't a show that we can get on here and totally dissect as miserable and the reasons why everything was wrong. It was a show. But didn't live up to Raw. Not even close. And we'll get into that a little in a little more depth in a minute. But before we start, I wanted to address a couple of things. The first thing being the CM Punk tweet that happened a couple of days ago, I guess. Where CM Punk finally broke his Twitter silence or on wrestling or whatever and basically said, if you're a fan and you don't like what you see, then just stop watching or stop bitching. In essence, that's what he said. Just stop watching it. So CM Punk's advice to people who grew up loving wrestling, totally love wrestling, is when your team is bad or your federation is bad or you don't like the direction that it's heading, give up. Give up. So CM Punk's advice to fans is don't be fans. I wonder if he would take that exact same philosophy with the Chicago Blues. I wonder if the Chicago Blues just sucked for two seasons. If he just stopped watching hockey. Stop being a fan. Because, to my mind, isn't that what a fan is? A fan sticks by what they love or the team that they follow, but they critique them and they're very open in their feelings about how they can improve. That's what sports radio is built on, no? Fans calling up saying, I really think the Mets should trade for a pitcher, or I really think the Giants should do this, or I really think the New York Rangers should do that. Isn't that what sports is built on? And CM Punk's advice is, oh, if you don't like it, give up. Just turn it off and forget it. Forget it exists. I wonder if he would also espouse that same philosophy in his MMA career. If you're no good at something, give up. You're obviously no good at MMA, so give up. Go back to what you're good at, huh? But you're not doing it. I think really it's time that we just broke this down and said the following, and then I'm just going to let this go. Because I truly and honestly feel in my heart of hearts, and if you've listened to this show from day one, you know my opinion has not changed. CM Punk at his best was an average wrestler. No better. His main talents were on the mic. where he could shoot his mouth off very well. And continually, his main talent in life seems to be shooting his mouth off very well and being controversial. And the whole idea behind CM Punk being a legend or being this or being that is dumb. And fans just got brainwashed into thinking it because a lot of fans are sheep. And they'll just follow a leader. And CM Punk decided, I'm going to be your leader. Since I'm only average in the ring, I can mouth off and make you think I'm special and make you think I'm pipe bombing and make you think I'm ad-libbing and make you think I'm doing all these things. And I'll just carry that over into real life and I'll tell you I'm a trained MMA fighter and I can get in there with the best of them and then I can't beat someone who's had one professional fight in his life and is half his age. He's a con man. And he's got through life being a con man. And he's going to be a footnote in wrestling history. See, if you love something, you don't give up on it. That's the whole point. And that, his exact philosophy, is why I can tell you CM Punk never really loved wrestling. You all want to get on the Ultimate Warrior and other people saying they didn't love wrestling. They just got in it for the bucks. Well, I don't know, man. Where's CM Punk? You love wrestling, you're still doing it. Daniel Bryan suffered I don't know how many concussions and was told you probably shouldn't wrestle again. Where is he? Oh, that's right. He's a SmackDown Tag Team Champion because he doesn't want to give up because he loves wrestling. So if you want to take your advice from CM Punk, go ahead and take your advice from CM Punk. I wouldn't take CM Punk's word if he said it was sunny outside. Second point to make before we go to the SmackDown report has to do with an update on Lars Sullivan. We did tell you, and we were one of the first people to tell you that the injury was much more serious. About 10 days ago, we said they thought it was a minor injury, but we were being told it was much more serious. Well, unfortunately, it is much more serious, and you're looking at possibly 6 months before you see Lars Sullivan again. And quite honestly, that could really be the end for Lars Sullivan. I mean, they gave him a half-hearted push to begin with, and then all these tweets came up that they got blindsided by. And then he had the problem with suffering from anxiety attacks and other things. And now he's injured. And this lackluster feud he had with the Lucha House Party didn't do him any favors. And I think the WWE in hindsight takes a look at this and says it wasn't going in the direction we wanted anyway. So I don't know. I don't know what's next for Lars Sullivan. I mean, he's under contract, so they're likely do something with him, but none of this bodes well for his future career. So it's a shame. I mean, the WWE could use another big guy who's a, you know, powerhouse and unstoppable sort of character to go up against some of the faces, but it's not going to be Lars Sullivan, at least not for 6 months. So let's go to the phones here. Mike, you can comment on either one of them if you like.
You know, you're right on this whole thing about CM Punk. I mean, I've seen places where they say, well, isn't he the same thing as, I don't know, Bray Wyatt? No, Bray Wyatt knows what he is. Bray Wyatt seems to love the sport and wants to do something in the sport. So, no, he is not the same as Bray Wyatt. He's just a guy, he's just a small guy that loves to shoot his mouth off. All right? And that's all he is. Now, as far as Lars Sullivan, there are guys down on the forum that down in NXT that they haven't even used yet that could be used in that same manner that we haven't even seen on NXT TV. You know, there's this Babatunde guy they have down there. There's another guy. There's another big, imposing looking guy that they could use like that. But obviously, if he's still in the contract now, don't put it past them to not use him at all. I mean, look,
what's his name, former Wyatt family members under contract, and what they're doing jack all with him.
Right.
Yep, Luke Harper. They're doing jack all with him. So don't now he kind of ran afoul of him. So maybe that's why they're doing jack all with him. But don't put it past the WWE and do not a damn thing with him.
No, I agree with you 100%. Don't put it past the WWE to say, well, we gave it a shot and it didn't really work out. And let's be honest, it wasn't really working out. They got him in a weird feud with the Lucha House Party that wasn't helping him. And then he cut that unusual promo where he almost sounded like he was a face because he was saying, well, all my life I've been called a freak and this is what's caused me to be that. It was, at best, it was a convoluted beginning to Lars Sullivan's story, and I don't know where this was going. I know they had big plans for him originally. He was supposed to fight John Cena and win. He was supposed to have all this big push, and then it was he could barely get by the Lucha House Party. I don't know. Like you said, though, Mike, don't put it past him. Don't put it past him to just, you know, after 6 months, just sit him on the shelf. We got bigger fish to fry. We're on to the next thing. Sullivan's had a cursed sort of a beginning to his WWE career, hasn't he? All right, well, let's get on to this SmackDown show, because while I do think it was a fair show, a decent show, it was a far cry from what Raw was on Monday night, and they went back to some of their bad ideas that I truly think they need to put in the rearview mirror. We started out with a New Day coming out, talking their, you know, normal talk, doing what they do best and entertaining the audience. Dolph Ziggler comes out and essentially cuts the same promo he has cut week after week after week. And this is not really helping. I got to tell you that initially the Dolph Ziggler thing was working for me. But the reason it was working for me is because Dolph Ziggler came out with a different approach. And his approach was, I'm not mad at Kofi Kingston. I like Kofi Kingston. I think Kofi Kingston's an excellent champion. I think Kofi Kingston worked hard and got what he deserved. But that should have been my spot. Which is, of course, undeserving because he gave up his belt and disappeared. But in his mind, his motivation was, I've been here just as long. I've suffered the same things Kofi has with being a mid-carder and then a minor champion and then a mid-carder and then a run at this and then back and forth and back and forth. And truthfully, everything that Kofi Kingston's career has been, mine has sort of been too, and I deserve that spot. That should have been my spot. And now it's went from that to, I hate Kofi Kingston, and I'm going to destroy him and embarrass him and humiliate him. And then that's just another average wrestling feud, which I don't get. And this whole thing with KO and Sami Zayn, I've never seen two people with more talent get so old so quick. The Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn thing is dead in the water already. Already. And you're talking about two guys who potentially, if handled correctly, could be top dogs in the Federation. The Kevin Owens-Sami Zayn partnership could be one of the main focuses in WWE television if it was handled correctly. It's not being handled correctly. And they just come out to be jabrones now. That's what they do. So obviously the jaw-jacking between Dolph Ziggler and Kofi Kingston, which Kofi Kingston, by the way, did a fairly good job, I thought, leads to a match with Xavier Woods. Now, Xavier Woods, we've said before, Dolph Ziggler can put on a good match with about anyone, and that is true. But Xavier Woods is underrated when it comes to that, too. Xavier Woods often isn't the guy that gets in the ring in the tag team matches. And when he does, he's limited to half the time in the ring or whatever. We were reminded how good Xavier Woods can be on his own. And he's very good. He's very good. And these guys put on an entertaining match. But of course, we saw what happened with Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, and then everybody being banned from ringside. And it was a little overbooked. finally, Dolph Ziggler just flat out wins with a super kick, which was a really good looking super kick while Xavier Woods was kind of tangled up or tied up in the ropes. Woods sold it well. Overall, it was a pretty good match, but I don't think it helped further the excitement for a Dolph Ziggler Kofi Kingston match at Stomping Grounds. Todd, what do you think?
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was a pretty good match with Kingston and the other members of New Day against Owens and Ziggler and Zayn, like right there, and like you said, it was a pretty good match, and I really enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it, Mike, but it didn't do anything for me as far as to further this storyline between Kofi Kingston and Dolph Ziggler, which I hoped was going to get deeper. I really did hope it was going to be one of those things by which fans could sort of identify with Ziggler a little bit and say, I get where he's coming from. He's extremely frustrated. He got to the point in his career where he knew he wasn't going to go any farther, so he quit. He walked away and said, forget this. I know I'm not going to get any better than I am now. They're not going to give me any more opportunities than they've already given me. I'm stuck in this rut, in this limbo of WWE's mid-card, and I'm never going to rise out of it. And then the minute he leaves, Kofi Kingston rises out of it and becomes champion. And he comes back saying, wait a minute. The very reason I left is I thought there was never going to be opportunities for us guys like myself and Kofi Kingston. And what happens? The minute I leave, the door opens for Kofi. That should have been me. I was hoping we were going to get more of that. And now it's just denigrated into normal wrestling feud.
Right. It's just denigrated. And look, as far as Xavier Woods, I've liked him ever since he was Consequences Creed back in his TNA days. You know, that's how far I go back with him. You know, he was very good even then. So we know he can get the job done as a singles guy. Like you said, it's not that they don't want to. It's that he's choosing to or they've chosen to have him be just almost the third wheel in that three-man tag team.
Yeah, I mean, Woods is the guy who's sort of like almost like the manager, you know. He plays the trombone, he comes down, he gets a lot of mic time, but he doesn't necessarily get a lot of ring time. And again, I think this match reminded us all, or at least it reminded me, that Xavier Woods is really good at what he does. And he could certainly have a very nice solo run if that's the way they wanted to go with it. Okay, well, anyway, we get, by the way, we get a backstage thing where people are auditioning, I guess, to be the special guest referee for Baron Corbin. I have no time for crap like this. This is the type of stuff that kills WWE's ratings. And yeah, there's going to be people who say, wasn't it funny that Matt Hardy came out and called Sheldon Benjamin, Senior Benjamin, whatever. Whatever. I thought this was supposed to be like a serious angle where Baron Corbin is looking for that perfect guy to be a special guest referee that's going to screw Seth Rollins, not let's get our jabron guys in there and our comedy guys in there. You know, stick that in the 24/7 title division and forget it. So I wasn't too thrilled with that, to be perfectly honest. I don't know. I mean, look, the problem with the WWE right now is they can't decide what they want to be. They'll take an angle that's fairly serious and try to make it a comedic angle. They'll take a comedic angle and try to turn it serious. It's all over the place. This didn't thrill me. Anyway, Heavy Machinery defeats the B team. This is just a warm-up, of course, for their match with Brian and Rowan. You know, it is what it is. The tag team division over there on SmackDown is woeful. Woeful. And even the names that could be big, like Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, they do nothing but lose. And right now, the New Day is kind of tied up, and yeah, we're a tag team, but mostly we're backing Kofi, and it's a shame because the SmackDown tag team division has suffered greatly. And if you really take a look around, other than heavy machinery, I don't know what would be next for Brian and Rowan if they got by heavy machinery. There's not much there. But heavy machinery did what they did. It's okay. It was what it was. Let's go to the Moment of Bliss segment, because this I did think was good. Bayley and Alexa Bliss kind of cut it close to reality, didn't they? I mean, we don't know for sure how these two get along. But one thing we do know is that Bayley legitimately is close with Sasha Banks, and Sasha Banks and Alexa Bliss do not get along. And with this new angle that Alexa Bliss is using about the real Bayley being a totally different person, a lot of stuff flew that was perhaps more real than some people might think. With Alexa Bliss saying nobody had time for her down in NXT except possibly Charlotte. And Bayley accusing Alexa Bliss of thinking she deserves everything, and she's not really as good as she says. She's just she feels like she's entitled. And what we're seeing, I think, is obviously scripted, but at the same time, I think there's some real emotion in here, because it got pretty heated. And of course, it turned into a brawl, which Nikki Cross tried to break up. And it actually did further my interest in this match. Now, if you recall, it was Alexa Bliss and the horrible segment of This Is Your Life, Bayley, that almost destroyed Bayley's career. Right after that segment, Bayley's career kind of nosedived. Nobody took her seriously. They had that kendo stick match where Bayley wouldn't even use the kendo stick. And her career kind of nosedived. So now we're bringing it full circle back to another Bayley-Alexa Bliss feud, where we hope it doesn't take another nosedive. But this one seems to have more legs, and this one seems to be grounded a little bit better in reality. And I did like where they went with it, Mike. I thought that both girls did a pretty good job, and it felt to me like some of the things that was coming out of their mouth, while maybe exaggerated, wasn't necessarily totally fiction either.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, think about it. This is, we don't know, and you know, we got branches on a tree here. We got the Bayley. We still got the whole thing between Alexa and Nikki Cross in the background here. We don't know what's going to happen when the match takes place. If Nikki's going to do something to cost Bayley or to somehow cost Alexa Bliss the match, I don't know. We don't know yet. That's going on in the background. But this, you're absolutely right on this. This could resurrect Bayley's career. I mean, we've been screaming, you know, that Bayley's too sugary sweet, that she needs to get tougher, you know, for a long time. This could end up having her getting tougher, you know, getting more, you know, I don't want to say extreme, but you get what I'm saying, right, Marcus?
Edgier, yeah, just an edgier Bayley. Yeah, it absolutely could. I mean, again, we've come full circle. The last feud with Alexa Bliss destroyed Bayley's career. Let's see if this one can boost it in some way, shape, or form. A good segment overall. Anyway, we get Drew McIntyre and Elias. We get more of the Shane McMahon stuff. I honestly don't know where this is going. But if I was a betting man, I would tell you that Shane McMahon is obviously in line. It's going to be in line for a title shot of some kind. I guess they're going to go back to the Miz feud. I don't even know. But the bottom line is Shane McMahon doesn't even have a match at Stomping Grounds, and he's front and center, front and center, front and center. We end up getting Drew McIntyre and Elias, and the Miz has 10 seconds to find a partner, and the only person he can find is R-Truth, who's hiding. Trying to see, here's the thing. Who wants to be the 24/7 champion if all you have to do your whole life long is hide? That's why this 24/7 championship doesn't work. Isn't the champion supposed to, I want to defend my belt, but who wants to defend it against a mob of just angry people who are running at you like you know, the villagers trying to storm Castle Frankenstein and burn it down. Wouldn't it be one guy at a time? It doesn't even make any sense. While a lot of fans are really behind this 24/7 thing, I think it's terrible. I think it's ruining the product. It's like a Saturday morning cartoon. It's getting in the way of serious angles. It just isn't working for me. Obviously, Drew McIntyre and Elias defeat The Miz and R-Truth, which leads to Drake Maverick becoming the new 24/7 champion. And you can just about guarantee that the reason he mentioned his wedding and everything like that is because at some point someone's going to crash the wedding and try to take the title from Drake Maverick. This isn't really even a title. It's a game of it's like a game of hot potato, and it's just, it's not doing anything for me, Todd. I don't know.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it's not doing much for me either. It's just like, it's a joke. It's a joke to everyone. It's like a slap in the face to us wrestling fans. It's like you're wanted by the police or something. Everybody's after you. It's a joke.
Yeah, it's not even defending a belt. It's a cartoon thing. And okay, so once in a while it's funny and you get a few laughs out of it, but is that what a belt's supposed to do? Is just give you a few laughs? I don't know. I mean, if you like it, you like it. I personally don't. And I definitely am not a fan of mixing it in with serious angles, because I just think in the long run, it just makes everybody look kind of like they're in this ridiculous, children's comedy thing, Mike.
Right. It's almost a Three Stooges belt, you know. That's what it seems like to me. And look, I did enjoy Truth's reaction to losing the belt. It was almost like he didn't even know he lost the belt or something, you know. That was pretty cool, you know. Of course, Truth has been making chicken salad out of chicken crap ever since they gave him the belt. So it shouldn't surprise me that I would enjoy that particular reaction.
Yeah, it's not that it's not occasionally entertaining. It's that it feels like it's getting in the way sometimes. It feels like, okay, well, if we're supposed to take this whole great big Shane McMahon thing seriously, and we don't know who the special guest referee is going to be, and we've got these dastardly villains, and then, oh, let's throw in R-Truth hiding under a ring, and then here comes everybody, and it's the Three Stooges again, and, you know, everybody chases everybody. It's like, wow, you all belong to the same federation, and it puts them in a light I don't like. You know, in the middle of the most dramatic scene of an action film, they don't take a comedy break. There might be some comedy in that action film in between the action, but not when the serious stuff is happening. And the WWE is starting to mix that. And I'm not sure I like it. And again, I know Drake Maverick, we're going to get to see the wedding, and we're going to get to see someone take the title from him or try to take the title from him at the wedding. If you're into this, sort of satirical comedic wrestling, I guess this is your thing. I don't see the point, because from the very beginning, who in the world would want the title? What does the title mean? Does it mean prestige? No. So why would you have it? The only reason a champion, you see, you take a guy like Seth Rollins, and Seth Rollins gets in the ring and says, you know, this means everything to me. I've struggled my whole career to get here, and I want to defend it against the very best people. Or you take Kofi Kingston, who says, I hope Brock Lesnar cashes in on me. Because while everybody else is saying, oh, you know, Kofi couldn't handle Brock Lesnar, I want to be the best champion in the world. If I can't beat the best, then I don't deserve the belt. Well, if that's the way you want us to feel about champions, why are there guys running away rather than to defend their belt? I don't want to defend my belt. Let me hide. Let me put myself in disguises. How is that a champion? A champion doesn't run from defending a belt. And if the very premise of the belt is you have to run or you're just going to get mob beat down, who the hell wants the belt? It doesn't bring you prestige to hide, to have to come to the arena in disguises, to have to try to avoid defending it. How does that bring prestige? And if 17 people are allowed to just run down and beat you up in a gang mentality, that doesn't sound like something anybody would want. So why would you strive for that belt? What would be Drake Maverick's motivation to be that champion? See, that's my point. It doesn't really make any sense. Anyway, we get Seth Rollins and Kofi Kingston taking on Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. God have mercy with the Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn thing already. 2 out of 3 falls. I'm so frustrated with the way that they've handled Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn that there's nothing you can really do with them that's going to appease me at this point. You've ruined two major guys. I mean, these are not two guys you plucked out of obscurity and said, well, we don't have anything to do with these two guys. These two guys are sitting backstage with their fingers in their butt, eating at catering, watching the monitor. And we've decided to make them a tag team that never really wins, but they're troublemakers. Okay, well, then maybe that's a good thing. This is Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. These are two major names. Two guys who could be top contenders for belts. Two guys who could be, at worst, upper mid-carders, and at best, high-level main eventers. And all they do every week is get beat up. That's all they do. And by the time you get around to splitting them up and trying to make them something individually, they are going to have been so ruined collectively that fans are not going to take them seriously, and they're going to say, well, these are these two guys who always lose. They're the B team with a better name. Recognition. That's it. They're two steps off, Mike, from being the B team. They just come out and all they do is lose.
That's right. And think about this. We didn't like it when they gave Sami Zayn the whole mouthpiece for Vince McMahon thing, which, by the way, they did not make anything of. They could have made something of that, and they didn't. They didn't do it in the right way. So, again, something fell flat on the face that probably shouldn't have fell flat on its face. So that, and you know that if Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens would go to AEW, that would be huge.
Of course. Of course it would be. And this is the thing, you know, Kevin Owens signs a 5-year deal with the WWE and comes back to be treated this way. Now, I know the WWE can put a positive light on it and say, well, I mean, we gave you championship shots at the SmackDown, the WWE champion, and you're in the middle of the mix with the New Day, which is a big, deal. And yeah, he's being treated like garbage just because you're giving him a lot of airtime. Doesn't necessarily mean he's being treated well. A guy like Kevin Owens, I mean, you could run with and make some major feuds and some really good ones. A guy like Sami Zayn, you could do the same thing with. They've practically given up now on the mouthpiece for McMahon thing, and Sami Zayn is now basically just Kevin Owens' underling. And what it all amounts to is it's not going anywhere. It's going to two buddies who are devious and sometimes funny and conniving, but they always get their ass kicked. That's what you want out of these two guys. That's the best you got for them, huh? And then you wonder why talent becomes frustrated because, you know, this is something that if you did it with Heath Slater and someone, you might say, okay, well, that's good for Heath. But this is Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. And there's so much more you could be doing with them, and you're just like, nah. That's frustrating. It's frustrating to fans. I'm sure it's frustrating to them. So while they're getting a lot of TV time and they always seem to be in the main event, what good does it do you if you're always in the main event getting your ass kicked? I've seen Sami Zayn pin more times in the past 2 months than I've seen in his whole career. It's all he does is get pinned. And there are people, hey, well, you know, it's still protecting Kevin Owens. It's not protecting Kevin Owens. It's making Kevin Owens look ridiculous. So all in all, SmackDown had its had some moments. The Xavier Woods match was good. A little overbooked, but good. I suppose we could say that the Moment of Bliss added some fuel to the fire of the Bayley and Alexa Bliss match on Sunday. But overall, it just felt lackluster. Overall, it didn't have that pulse that I felt Raw did. This week, Raw was very good. It felt different. It felt like every segment mattered to a degree. It had a storyline that kind of gelled. And it just kind of felt as though everything fell into place. This didn't. This felt like separate segments, again, that had, you know, they tried to tie into each other but failed. And I just, overall, comparatively to Raw, it failed. I think it failed. But giving it a grade on its own, I'm going to give it a flat-out C. I don't think it was horrible. I just don't think it was special, Mike.
Yeah, I don't think it was special either. And look, the three things that saved this thing were the Kofi match, the Moment of Bliss, and Xavier's match. You know, those are the things that saved it, you know. And when you can say that about those three things, It's not good. I mean, you can't compare it. We try to compare Raw to SmackDown, but when one's really, really bad or average and one's really good, how can you? I mean, we all gave Raw an A-, right?
Yes.
I'm going to give it a C. You've given it a C. I'm not going to speak for Todd, but I'm going to assume – and he's going to probably give it somewhere around that. So that's basically average. I mean, average is good enough. And, you know, when you're in school, when you just squeak by the skin of your teeth, but you really want to really, really nail things. You go get into a big test, you want to nail things, right? They haven't been nailing things on a consistent enough basis on either show to make people want to stay and watch, you know?
Yeah, there's no momentum. You know, you get that one good show and you feel like, oh, there's going to be some momentum. Now, if we can get two or three good shows in a row, we can really start to build momentum. And they'll do an outstanding show, and then they'll do an average show. And then they'll do a slightly above average show, and then a disaster. It can't be that way. They've got to get this ball rolling and continue to make each one of these shows as good as they possibly can. Build some momentum on it so fans say, look, we've had a good solid couple of weeks or a month of Raws and SmackDowns that have been above average. They're going to have to really pull out the stops here with Stomping Grounds because no one's very excited about it. And, you know, the last time, I forget what pay-per-view it was, but I remember a pay-per-view last year that none of us were very excited about. We all said, the matches are eh. We're not really thrilled about any of them. And the following day, we had to say, wow, they really pulled off a great pay-per-view. Yeah, the matches weren't as far as being booked the way they were booked up to the pay-per-view. They weren't exciting. But man, when they got in the ring, it all worked out. Maybe this will be that. Right now, it feels like the WWE is hanging their hat on who will be the special guest referee. They're hoping that will be the buy-in, that everyone will say, I have to see who the special guest referee is, so I'm going to watch this event. Because they really haven't given you too much else. Anyway, let's go to Todd, see what his rating is. Todd, what's your rating this week?
I got to go with you, a flat C.
So we're all in agreement that it, you know, as a go-home show. It was average at best. It didn't build on the momentum that, unfortunately, Raw had helped. But it wasn't terrible. It was just average. It wasn't special, which is a shame. Because it should have been. Anyway, as far as our stomping grounds information on the special guest referees and all that stuff, there's a lot of people out there saying Brock Lesnar, but truthfully, that's probably not Brock Lesnar because it wouldn't make any sense. Why would Baron Corbin have as his special guest referee a man who could cash in the instant he wins? Why would anyone think that Brock Lesnar would find Baron Corbin any easier to beat than Seth Rollins, really? It doesn't make a ton of sense. So I don't think that it's going to be Brock Lesnar. My suspicion is that Shane McMahon has nothing to do. And I hope it's not Shane McMahon. I hope he is not tied into this in any way, shape, or form. But in a way, it would make sense, because if Shane McMahon somehow screwed Seth Rollins out of the belt, that furthers, because you know we're getting to the point here where we're going to have, in my opinion, we're going to have either a Miz feud with Shane again, or we're going to have a bigger match with Roman. I'm leaning toward a bigger match with Roman. And that could tie into it in some way, because I don't know who's left. If it's not Brock and Brock doesn't make any sense, then who's it going to be? Bobby Lashley? That doesn't make any sense. Some people have said Triple H. I'm not sure how that makes any sense. They're not going to come out with just like it's Heath Slater. They're not going to do that. Because that would be so anticlimactic that people would be like, what the F? So they wouldn't dare do that. So that's all I can think of. It's all I can think of. And if that's the case, and it is Shane McMahon, I don't know how that's going to fly. What's your thoughts on that, Mike? Who do you think the special guest referee might be on Sunday?
You know, I'm not totally sure. I mean, he went through a bunch of mid-carders and some upper guys in hitting them with chairs and stuff. So it's not going to be them. I mean, it can't be anybody but Shane McMahon. I mean, and if it's Shane McMahon, then that's going to either bring out somewhere along the line in that match on Sunday, it's either going to bring out because it's Seth Rollins. Roman Reigns, or it's going to bring out The Miz to
right.
screw with Shane McMahon, you know? So you know that's coming. You know one of those two things is coming on Sunday. You know that. So that kind of makes that match kind of anticlimactic because you know something like that's going to happen.
The only thing that keeps this match even alive, in my opinion, is A, we are not sure who the special guest referee is, and B, Seth Rollins could still win and not leave the building as champion if Brock Lesnar's there. The chances of Brock Lesnar being at a pay-per-view this inconsequential is probably very small. Probably very small. So I'm not predicting that at all. But it could happen. WWE might want to throw you a surprise to say, see, you shouldn't miss these pay-per-views, you know, something like that. Other than that, I can't imagine who. Because I just don't see anybody left that would make any difference. Anyway, we do have a little bit more news concerning the AEW. And here's something very interesting. If you remember, when AEW first did all their press conferences and talked about how they were going to run their operations, they said, and I quote, our workers will be allowed to wrestle for whoever they want, provided that they aren't booked to wrestle for us. We're going to give them the freedom to say who they want to work for. As long as they are not currently scheduled to work for us, it doesn't interfere with our schedule, then they can absolutely go where they need to go or want to go to earn a living. That's what's going to set us apart. That lasted 5 minutes. John Moxley is not allowed to wrestle in Texas for New Japan because they don't want anybody wrestling for another company in the States that's going to be on television and a network that they feel is quite possibly competition for them. Likewise, Chris Jericho, who wasn't booked for that anyway, but nonetheless, he couldn't be if he wanted to be. So now what they're basically saying is, well, you can work for anybody you want to, provided that they don't air television shows on a network that could potentially be our competition. We also don't want you to do it in the United States. So now we got a lot of rules and regulations. And I told you guys, I told everyone who listens to this show, if they run their wrestling federation the way they initially claimed they're going to run it, remember they said everyone gets equal pay. That wasn't true. Not everyone's being paid as much as Chris Jericho. How could you run a federation where everyone gets equal pay when you're not using everyone equally? That would be like saying Brock Lesnar makes as much as the guys from the Ascension. It's impossible. Or vice versa. So we knew that was bullshit. Then it was, well, you can wrestle for whoever you want to as long as it doesn't conflict with our schedule. Well, you saw how long that lasted. They're finally coming to the harsh reality that this is business. It reminds me of the people who say, free everything. And then when they realize, well, actually, it's not free. And I'd be one of the people paying for it. And you never mind. We're changing that. Yeah, well, see, that's the problem. You're starting to face the harsh realities of the business world and realize that running a federation is more than you getting together with your friends and holding a wrestling party in your backyard. Let's all get a group of our friends together and we're all happy, buddy, buddy, buddy. And we're all doing it for the fans and we're all just happy little soldiers marching in and playing our part. That's fine until business gets in the way. And the bottom line is money. And the bottom line is your television stations are telling you what they want. And your sponsors are telling you what they want. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, this is different than I thought. Welcome to the real world. I think this is why the WWE really didn't go too crazy when all of these announcements were being made. They didn't fundamentally change their way of doing business and say, oh, well, then we can just match that. Because I think they had a pretty good idea going in that they're not going to be able to do that. They can talk that game, but they can't do it. Unless they just want to go bankrupt in a year. They're also coming to the realization that if you allow some of your top stars to go places and wrestle, they're going to get injured. Oh, okay, you got a week before my next event that I have you in? Fine, go wrestle for this federation. Oh, you broke your leg? Well, we're fucked, aren't we? Reality is starting to hit AEW in the face a little bit. And now we're going to see how some of these people who were told, everyone over here is equal, everything you do is up to you, you're your own creative force, you can wrestle for who you want and do what you want and be who you want. Let's see how they react now. When they're being told, yeah, not so much. I thought this was a very interesting turn of events, Mike.
It was. And look, you know, I know this isn't a political show, but it seemed that what they wanted to do, what AEW wanted to do, was basically almost be a socialist federation. In terms of how everybody gets paid the same, everybody gets this, everybody gets that, and all that stuff. And now they're seeing that it doesn't work. It's the old saying about socialism. Socialism works until you run out of other people's money, you know? So, yeah, they're figuring out that at some point you're going to run out of other people's money and you're not going to be able to do some of the stuff they promised that they were going to be able to do. You know?
Yeah, well, I mean, it cracks me up because we've had even callers call up and say, they don't need television. They don't? They don't need ratings. They don't? They're not going to kowtow to the network. They aren't? Well, then they're not going to exist. Because that's exactly what you have to do. Just because your name is Cody Rhodes, you don't get to say, I'm Cody Rhodes, and I don't have to listen to my sponsors. I don't have to listen to the television networks. I don't have to make money, and I don't need ratings. Yeah, you do. Of course you do. And you need to make money. Because Bob Kahn is not in this thing to lose his shirt and his pants. Because his kid's a pro wrestling fan. Because at the end of the day, he is a professional businessman and he knows what he needs. And that's why the pay-per-view was $60. Yeah, they're giving this one away for free because they realized that that was a publicity disaster. So now this one's going to be free. It's a goodwill gesture. Well, we'll see what happens, folks, because the bottom line of the situation is if you're going to run a successful business, and it doesn't matter whether that business is selling shirts or pro wrestling, there's a structure. And you can offer, it's like saying, I'm going to open up a donut shop. And everyone in the donut shop, managers, employees, cashiers, janitors, they're all getting paid exactly the same money. I don't know who'd want to be the manager then. Also, we're paying for everybody's health care and we're giving the donuts away for free or damn near free. And it's pay what you can afford. And if the people in, you know, aren't scheduled to work, they can work for somebody else and that'll be fine. My donut shop's going out of business. It's just not going to function. Because you can't do it. There's no incentive to do anything then. What's the incentive to pay for a donut if you can get it for free? What's the incentive to be the manager if you can be the guy who rings the cash register and make equal money? What's the incentive to come into work if you can work for other people too and you don't really need that money? And what's the incentive to make a profit if, you know, you're giving things away? So this is the problem. AEW fundamentally from the very beginning said all the right things to make the wrestlers' eyes go, ooh, we need to be there. This is going to be our little oasis in the desert. This is going to be our home where each and every one of us are going to be treated as creative geniuses and artistic whatever, and everything that we do is going to be fine, and we can work for whoever we want, whenever we want. And then the second somebody tries to do it, no, you can't do that. Why would we let you do that? That would be counterproductive to our business. Yeah, no crap. Just wait until it starts coming down to how come I never win a match, or how come I'm not featured on television, or how come I'm not the top guy in the pay-per-view. Just wait. Because you got all these things to deal with. You got all these egos. See, everybody over there wants to be the top guy. Everybody, and you should want to be the top guy. But at some point in your life, you have to understand I'm not the top guy right now. And if they're telling you, oh, you can do what you want, you can write your own ticket, then there's a lot of these people like Neville who's going to say, I'm not losing to Hangman Page. I'm not coming up there to lose. So, you know, when you got something for me to win, you let me know and I'll come up there and I'll work for you for X amount of dollars. I'll write my own check and tell you whether I'm winning or losing. You want everybody to do that then? That's what everybody's going to do? That's a disaster. That's not going to work. And as people are going to have to tighten these reins, guess who's going to start looking like more like a boss and less like a friend? Cody Rhodes. See, never make promises you cannot keep. Because then people will hold you to it and say, wait a minute, dude. How come you're telling me who I can wrestle for? I thought you said I could wrestle for anybody I want. How come I'm 0-3 and 0-4 and my graphic underneath my name plaque says 0-4 in AEW? That doesn't make me look good when I go out on the indies. That doesn't make me look good when I'm trying to get booked. there's going to be a whole lot of things that they're not going to be able to live up to. And I told you from the very beginning, they're not going to be able to live up to it. Not and be successful. So it's an interesting turn of events. No John Moxley at the New Japan tournament in Texas. And from what I hear, Todd, as long as it's in the States, they're not going to want you to compete on any federation that has any major access to any television station. So that's a change of heart by AEW.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said. And like you said, if you can't bring your title from another company to another company and they're not affiliated. I thought there was like rumors of that. You could do that, but now I guess if you're with AEW, you can't bring another title into that company.
Well, let's face it. I mean, they basically used Ring of Honor and then kind of ditched them. Stole a lot of the New Japan talent. New Japan and Ring of Honor work well, you know, kind of harmoniously together. So that's going to be their, you know, they're still saying, oh, no, we're fine with these companies. Yeah, not so much. These companies are not fine with you. So this is what you're going to have to deal with. Welcome to the real world. Welcome to the business world where everybody's out to cut everybody's throat. That's the reality you have to deal with. And that's what I was trying to tell everyone. You could be Mr. Nice Guy all you want. And you can come in with the best of intentions, but you're swimming in a sea of sharks. And if you decide, well, I'm just going to be the bait fish, then you're going to get swallowed. So then you're going to have to be a shark yourself. And then before you know it, hey, we're all sharks. We're all businessmen swimming in the water. Out to bite each other, out to take that chunk. And we're not all in a circle singing Kumbaya. Anyway, back to the WWE. The ratings for SmackDown this week are under 2 million. Well under 2 million. And I was talking to a friend about it, and I said, you know, he was saying, well, you know, it's not that bad. And I'm saying, comparatively, it's horrible because Impact Wrestling, okay, they drew horrible 100,000 people on you know, Pop. But here's what you got to understand. Pop reached no one. So if Pop's ultimate reach is, I don't know, let's say 1 million people, and they reached 100,000 of those million, then what did they reach? 10%? USA Network is 50 million people. And they're drawing 1.6? That's not even 10%. So that's what you got to understand is, okay, well, you know, 1.5 comparatively to 100,000 doesn't sound close. But when you look at the percentages of the households they reach, comparatively speaking, the WWE is not drawing the audience they used to by half. Impact was doing those numbers on Spike or close to it. So that shows you very clearly, Mike, the WWE has lost a lot of their audience in this past 6-8 months.
Right, and look, I would wager to say this. I would wager to say if Impact was on a better channel, they'd probably be doing better in the ratings as well. Because who watches what is it, the Outdoor Channel, whatever the hell they're on right now?
Pursuit.
Yeah, who the hell watched that channel? You know, and
who even gets it?
And this is we're talking about USA. I mean, I guarantee you if after a year that TNT figures out that AEW is not going to draw after a year 1 million customers, this is TNT we're talking about, you know? They're going to cut them. Just like, I mean, what's Fox thinking, you know?
I mean, well, again, yeah, what is Fox thinking? As far as TNT, I don't know if they've shelled out some money to AEW or AEW's paid them money. I don't know what the deal is. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, they're going to have to do some numbers on there. Initially, they will. But let's see if if it remains. And yeah, Fox has got to be, you know, their eyebrows have got to be up in the top of their skull at this point, saying, oh, we're not paying $1 billion for 1.6 million viewers. I mean, come on. It's not good. WWE has to realize at this point, this is not good. It's on the precipice of disastrous, to be quite honest. And they're going to have to right the ship. And they're going to have to do it quick, because this is June. You got 3 months. It's the end of June. You got 3 months to turn this ship around. Because if you think the move to Fox is going to be magic, and oh, now that we're on Fox, the viewership went right back up, you're wrong. It's not going to be that way. It's not going to be that way at all. The last thing we want to talk about, I'm going to run a little bit over time, is Sami Callihan, Conan, Disco Inferno had a very interesting conversation. Sami Callihan says, what's wrong with wrestling is primarily that the fans themselves want instant gratification. They don't want a storyline to develop. They don't want a heel getting over on a face for 2 or 3 weeks or 4 weeks or 6 weeks before the payoff. And because of that, wrestling federations are caving in and giving them that, and it's making wrestling boring. I could not disagree more wholeheartedly. And in fact, I think that's a very naive statement. How do you know? He's basing it on, oh, fans were upset when Vince McMahon was doing all these horrible things to Kofi and saying, this isn't right. We won't call. Well, that's the whole thing they're supposed to do, right? Isn't that what you want their reaction to be? What do you want their reaction to be? Yes, give us more of this. So, Sammy, when you got fans online saying this is horrible, then yeah, good. Makes the payoff that much sweeter, right? Now, Conan, to his credit, I don't always agree with Conan. I very seldom agree with Conan. Says, you got to liken this to a movie, not a sport, which is what I've been saying for I don't know how long. He's saying you can't just, in a sport, it's fine to just have two guys, you know, going at it, and it is what it is, but that's not what we are. We're more like a movie, and there's got to be a reason, and there's got to be a passion of it, and there's got to be a, this is why I want this guy to win, and I want this guy to lose. There's got to be that storyline. There's got to be that depth in it, and if you don't have it, wrestling can't survive on just everybody's gimmick being, I'm a good wrestler. That's my gimmick. I'm a good wrestler. That's everybody's gimmick now. And he's right. He's as right as he can possibly be. So that is why I'm hoping that the WWE wakes up and realizes that a good quality gimmick, like a Bray Wyatt gimmick, that's obviously succeeding. Fans love it. Can't wait to see the debut of Bray Wyatt. They need more of that. Everybody's gimmick cannot be, I'm a good wrestler. Conan's right. And the last thing we want to touch on is there was a lot of people who wrote and said, where honestly is Rusev? Has he been suspended? Has he been fired? Is he just, you know, sitting out his contract under protest? We haven't seen him since the Saudi Arabia show, and before that it was months. And the answer is no, he's actually asked for time off, and he was granted time off. But he has been very vocal about his displeasure with this company on Twitter and other places. And it's not, listen, him and Lana together, they can be very aggressive in their displeasure for how they're being used. And I don't know if it's going to help them. I have to say no. It doesn't help them. But in the long run, I don't know if I blame them. I mean, when you're totally underutilized the way Rusev has been, and Lana to an extent, I don't know. Do you take the Shinsuke Nakamura route where you say, I don't care? Just give me my money. I don't care if I'm on TV. I don't care if I'm losing. I don't care if I'm winning. Shinsuke Nakamura has that attitude about him. It's just like, whatever. I'm paid to do a job, whatever the job is. If you want me to stay here, I'll stay here. You want me to be the champion, I'll be the champion. You want me to be a jabron, I'll be a jabron. That seems, Shinsuke seems to not care. There are some people who do. I mean, Nakamura's already established. He's a guy who's going to go down in history as one of the top Japanese wrestlers ever. King of Strong Style. Rusev isn't really established yet. He's still a young guy. He's got a lot of years. And I think he wants to attempt to make an impact of some sort in the wrestling world. He's not going to do it sitting on the sidelines. He's not going to do it being in an ineffectual tag team. So, yeah, Rusev's been granted some time off by request, Mike. So that's where he's been.
Right. And look, they could have been mean about it and said no, because again, like you said, they've been aggressive. Both him and Lana have been very aggressive about their feelings and how they're feeling. They're being used and misused and stuff. They've been very aggressive about it. Just take a look at that video Lana put up on YouTube, you know, and that type of stuff, you know. So they could have been dicks about it and said, well, we're not going to give you this time off. But no, they were nice about it. So maybe they're trying to make nice with Rusev, and this is the first step in making nice with him. And maybe when he comes back, maybe they'll actually do something with it.
Let's hope that they have adopted my philosophy of give someone some time off, cycle them down a little bit and get them off television. And then when you bring them back, they seem special again, because it's been such a long time since we've seen them. Let's hope that that's what they're doing. Because if that's what they're doing, maybe Rusev will get one more nice run here that he deserves, quite frankly deserves. But I think that in this particular case, Conan is exactly correct when he says what's really killing the wrestling business these days is not that the fans are short attention span or instant gratification or that the writers suck necessarily. It's that everybody's gimmick is I'm just a good wrestler, and it's not enough to draw fans. It's not enough for fans to say, oh, I got to tune in to see this. That's what sets wrestling apart from other entertainment venues that are athletic-based. Two good baseball teams go at it, and you might say, oh, well, it's, you know, I just want to see this pitcher against this hitter. And it doesn't matter what the pitcher's philosophy of life is or the hitter's philosophy of life is. It's just two good athletes going at it. But wrestling can't really survive that way. Wrestling needs that drama. Wrestling needs that pomp and, you know, the whole big build-ups and things. It needs it. And Conan's right when he's saying it's not really getting it now. Nowadays, fans are saying, I'm going to go see Will Ospreay, you know, against Neville, just because both of these guys will be great and it'll be a great match. Okay, that's great. But how long does that survive before you say, well, I've sort of seen it? And then you want that backstory. Why are they fighting? Who's right? Who's wrong? That's what always made wrestling special. You take that away, you've watered it down. So let's hope that that's what the WWE is attempting to do now, is to solidify some characters. There is some rumor that Matt Hardy is going to try to reinvent himself as a little bit of a slightly different character than he's done before. He's doing some kind of weird, it's not easy being Matt Hardy gimmick, where he's basically saying how hard his life is, when in fact most of the things he's saying is actually pretty cushy, but he thinks they're hard, and that's a gimmick. Maybe they've got something in store for Rusev when he comes back. We know the Bray Wyatt thing is big. We'll see what they've got coming up with some of these other guys like Aleister Black and things like that. Maybe the WWE is moving a little bit more in that direction. We can only hope, Todd. We can only hope.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, let's hope it's for the best to have them get better and give them like better roles and everything and better angles and storylines. big ones. Big.
And by the way, before we leave, there's just one more thing I wanted to run by the panel. I know that Aleister Black will be debuting probably next week. And from all I'm being told, it's probably going to be Randy Orton with his major feud. They've been fighting on house shows, and Aleister Black's been going over. So that's probably a warm-up for this, but I couldn't help but juxtapose these two things. Aleister Black keeps saying, you know, knock on my door, knock on my door, fight me, knock on my door, knock on my door. And isn't it Bray Wyatt who's always saying, let me in, let me in, let me in? Wouldn't that be an interesting thing if the first person through that door was Bray Wyatt, Mike?
It really would. And, you know, it's like, let me in. Two things he's saying is let me in and follow the leader. Okay. Well, one, where is he going to lead us to? And two, where are we? One, where is he going to lead us to? You know, if we're going to follow the leader, knock on my door, let me in. Yeah, it would be interesting. That would be a fun cue to watch. You know, now, granted, like you
said, it would be. Of course, the problem is one of the two's got to lose, and they want to build both of those guys up, Mike. So that's not going to probably happen. But I just ran across my mind that their angles kind of coincide, huh?
Yeah, and look, and we know that we've heard for a while that Randy Orton wants a kind of a lesser role, so it wouldn't surprise me that, like you said, he's going to go over on Randy Orton.
Yeah, he's probably going to go over on Randy Orton. From what I heard, Vince McMahon has – Randy Orton's contract's up soon. And from what I heard, Vince McMahon offered him a tremendous amount of money, staggering amount of money. And he said no. Now, I don't know whether he's holding out for even more, thinking I can get more, which maybe he can. Or he's just done with it. Or he does want to pursue something with AEW, which I'm not sure AEW would even want a Randy Orton. It's not really their style. Maybe they would. I don't know. But I know he's turned down a tremendous offer. I mean, like a Brock Lesnar type number offer, Mike. So that's odd.
Right. And look, frankly, we talk about AEW needing a different looking kind of wrestler. Well, I mean, that would be Randy Orton, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, could it be possible? Yeah, it's possible. It's definitely possible. And they'd probably work around any schedule he wanted and, you know, do things like that. I don't know how much impact it would have. I don't think it would have as much impact even as Jon Moxley, but maybe I'm wrong. I just think Randy Orton's been so overexposed over the last, I don't know how long, that I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure he has a tremendous fan base of people who would say, oh, Randy Orton's in AEW, that's going to be awesome. And plus, you know, he's not been the most quiet employee. He causes trouble. And I don't know if AEW wants that kind of trouble either. So there's a lot to be weighed before you say Randy Orton's going to make that jump. I would imagine he's not. I would imagine he felt that that's probably really, really, really good money, but he can get a little bit more. He's probably right. To be honest, he's probably right. But I'll tell you the truth. If I was the WWE at this stage and Randy Orton turned down an offer that would make him arguably one of, if not the most highly paid WWE performer, I just let it go. Because I don't think he could hurt you at this stage of his career. I don't think he can hurt you wherever he goes. Not to the tune of the money you're talking about. And you could use that money to do a whole lot more than just sign one guy with questionable fan base. Yeah, everybody's into the RKO out of nowhere, but I don't see Randy Orton filling arenas at this stage of his career. I just don't. I think the shine's off the apple there a little bit. He's always going to be a legend. He's always going to be a big name. But is he going to draw a whole bunch of the modern AEW-type wrestling fans? I don't think so. I'd be surprised. Anyway, with Stomping Grounds looming on Sunday. We will be back here at 2 o'clock on Sunday with a pre-show, all of the last minute added matches, which they've added a couple, as well as any updates on the card and our predictions. We'll see you then. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. WrestleChat Radio is a Savage Blade production.